I'm your host, Caitlin Salamini, and this is the Postpartum Production Podcast. Here, we hold conversations about the intersection of caregiving, creative practice, and capitalist production, as well as what it means to be producing art while also being a parent in modern society. Find out more at www.postpartumproduction.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter.
Well, I kept waiting to record the intro to our final episode of this season. I kept waiting because of work commitments, because of kid commitments, because Mother's Day, because politics, because endless unpaid labor for public school fundraising, because obviously, as my voice sounds like Phoebe Buffay singing Smelly Cat right now, spring illnesses. But then I realized if I kept waiting, it may never happen, and I never get to share this wonderful compilation with you. So here we are, and this is my voice today. It feels funny and odd to call a podcast season a season. I mean, what is a season? To everything, turn, turn, turn. And that's what comes to mind when I think of seasons: winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons of life, youth, adolescence, parenting, middle age. But what is this season, this podcast season? We attempted to build a season of conversation, a season of thought, of thinking. And now I wonder, what's the next season? This podcast has definitely been a very unpaid labor of love for now 3 years, which is a miracle and a privilege. I was so excited to dig in on this season's focus on birth and creativity, and I couldn't have imagined how many thoughtful, vulnerable, and insightful conversations we could have had this season, and I apologize to those we weren't able to accommodate. I'm so grateful for the community we've built here, for the friendships I've made, the tears, the laughs, all the cliches. But for real, I'm not sure what the next season holds or what it will look like. Right now, the lilac outside my window that I've discussed a lot on this podcast has bloomed briefly for about 2 weeks, and now it's dead. Its scent is gone, but the leaves are vibrant and green, and the dead cat is still buried and dead beneath its roots. For me, my next season may find me in an MSW program, may find me, I hope, finishing my latest novel manuscript and shipping it off to my agent, who may not even believe I'm still a writer at this point. It may be more mothering as work, or let's be real, it'll definitely be more of that. It may be a proposition campaign to help fund public education. It may be continued activism. Okay, it definitely will be. On that note, I just picked up a donation today for our school raffle from our local toy store. The owner, whose children also attended public schools in the city, lamented that they've been so preoccupied with how tariffs are going to impact their business that he was sorry he hadn't put together anything more than gift cards for our raffle. He told me about a fundraiser for his daughter's public high school, and he said, "You just got to keep fighting for the little thing you can hold in your hands." He held his hands together like he was cupping a bowl or making an offering, like he was protecting something and giving it away all at once. I said, "I know, that's all I can do right now." I know that in hearing these conversations and in sharing these stories with us here too, that this will resonate with you. But I guess in the spirit of seasonality, I want to leave you with that image of holding and giving. It feels appropriate for the spring's turn into summer and for everything that we are all loving on and fighting for so much these days. Well, thank you for listening, even to my super smelly cat voice. And thanks for your patience as we figure out what the future holds for this podcast and for us all. And now, a brief recap of some of our favorite insights and conversations and connections this season.
And even just the language that a person would choose to use about their birth gives you such a window into who has influenced you. Like, what were your options? What did your mom talk to you about birth? Like, there's just so many layers that, yeah, just like you said, are so fascinating that I want to hear from everybody. Because I feel like, you know, writers are good at finding the narrative things within our lives. Like, that's obviously our life's work. We work really hard to learn how to do that. But so many people give birth, and it's this like narrative experience that is available to every birthing person of like, this is a thing that happened to me that was huge. This was a thing that happened that did change my life.
I mean, I think every time we sit down at the blank page, it's the type of birth, right? I mean, we're pulling something into existence that wasn't there before. So there's definitely that piece. And then taking these individual poems or these individual pieces of poems and pulling them together to create this larger whole is a whole other type of birth and creation. And sort of similar to parenting young people and giving birth to young people, it also doesn't stop there, right? It's like the poems and the book, they go out into the world and then they suddenly have this life of their own, much like our young people will as they transition into the world themselves.
The giving birth, though, I don't think it ends. I think it's a continual thing. Things will continually be created, you know, throughout one's life as one continues to grow.
What that meant was I then had the equipment necessary to honestly like have the gall to look at birth not only as what did it mean to me or what does it mean to my friend, but to think about it as a site from which to ask questions of who has power, what do these changes over time or these practices reveal about relative power or value, or whose kinds of knowledge is considered legible and real and whose isn't, and what do the ways that we use technology, for instance, demonstrate about that.
There's definitely a horror movie element to all of this. Like all of the blood, all of these crazy contractions, these crazy convulsions definitely reminded me of different horror movies and of the monstrous feminine, which is this thing that's really been a preoccupation of mine in my work and equating the feminine and the monstrous and how that can be this major sign of strength and reclamation of female agency.
You know, there's always that feeling of like, when is the right time to have a baby? And I don't think that there is in probably any profession, but this feels like one where it's very common to feel like afraid to do it because you're going to set yourself back or like remove yourself from the conversation. And anything you can do to like not do that is so beneficial. And for me, that's been creating my own things. But I've in the past had moments of resentment against that idea where it's like, you have to be doing all your own stuff if you want anything to happen, because it's not true for everyone, but I do feel like it's more and more the case in this field.
It's a very difficult thing to talk about because I'm not saying that that's bad or that it's bad that women would want that or be ambitious or work. But I do think that it's important to call attention to that narrative and the way it diminishes the other kind of work and also just these experiences of being a mother or giving birth or experiences that can't necessarily be defined in that way.
But adding context, and particularly for poets of color and then poets of color who are women, you know, we're left out of the archive often. So, you know, you're just creating context for these lives and people that had extraordinary incidences happen in their lives, but also, you know, that raised us. So that to me was like the work of the thing.
But this was like a lack of control that I completely was at peace with and invited, because I knew, you know, in the end what it was doing. And it was just so amazing. I mean, there was definitely a horror movie element to all of this. Like all of the blood, all of these crazy contractions, these crazy convulsions definitely reminded me of different horror movies and of the monstrous feminine, which is this thing that's really been a preoccupation of mine in my work and equating the feminine and the monstrous and how that can be this major sign of strength and reclamation of female agency.
Once I got past the initial shock, then I felt like I found this new courage, this new kind of force that I didn't know I had, because I think everything that had been told to me about the birth experience was how much it was going to hurt me and how much it was going to possibly injure or kill me, that I would be lucky to get out of it unscathed. I think that was like the vibe I had going into birth. And then actually in the birth of my older daughter, which was a very fast, very dramatic and intense natural birth, I remember looking into my husband's eyes and seeing pure fear, like awe and fear and like, whoa, and feeling like that is the correct response. And that is a place where I've stayed for a long time. Like, that is what I'm capable of, this awesome power. That sounds crazy to say out loud, but that is how I felt.
This is the only time in my life where I've been so forced to think about what's going on inside of my body. And I kind of wish we were always thinking about that. But I think in pregnancy and postpartum, you're so much more aware because there's an actual being that was inside and then it's outside, and that feeling of emptiness even is so, so striking. So I think that's what a lot of the work was about very soon after giving birth. A lot of reflections of the sensations of pregnancy, but also the sensations thereafter.
It's lovely to connect with people and readers and to feel in conversation with other people. But at the same time, it's been quite a shocking sense of a pattern of people feeling that they cannot feel how they feel about becoming mothers and that they cannot express simply how they feel, which is many things. You know, I think that the cultural norms, the feeling rules around motherhood are still, or in a different way, I mean, they're different every generation, but very strong. It's been really wonderful to see, maybe because I'm in this space more because of the book, but a lot of art making and expression, and definitely in the UK, we've got a lot of writing circles for new mothers. And I think that it's really important to process becoming a mother, becoming a parent, and through art, writing, words, language seems to be something which is really helpful.
Communities of women that were supporting each other outside of this capitalist system that you're talking about, where it was really very rural and community-based, and there had to be trust in the human body because the medical system was very basic, very bare bones. So it was kind of by necessity, but I saw that, and that also was inspiring to me.
So I think I've become a lot more productive with my time. And also, this is fiction, so nothing in here actually happened, but it all like kind of happened. I do write about myself. I don't imagine very well. So kids are just like an endless supply of things to write about. And so many conversations with little kids that aren't metaphors as they're happening can easily be a metaphor when you start writing about it. And then also, it's very interesting to see the ways that friends parent and how our friendships have changed, or choices they're making or choices I'm making. So that kind of stuff, it changes relationships in such an interesting way that this book is, it's really interested in those kinds of changes that all have to do with having a kid.
The creative process for me is an attempt to do what my body did in pregnancy with the part of me in my head. And then the part of me that's my body, because that's also on stage. But when your brain can take a quote, a movement, a piece of music, an idea, a feeling, and put them together and they turn into something, that is magical.
I just felt really on fire creatively and intellectually. Despite all the sleep deprivation, I felt a really strong desire to understand what was going on, because at times I was finding it so difficult that I needed to work out for my own psychological survival whether that made me a bad mum or if there was something fundamentally wrong with me that I wasn't enjoying every minute, or that I couldn't seem to feed well, or I couldn't soothe my very colicky child, or the feeling rules, to use Arlie Hochschild's term, then the norms around, you know, maternal subjectivity felt incredibly trapping and oppressive. So there was an element of survival to writing it. And how did I write it? I mean, I think that I was obsessed with the subject. A lot of that, I think, was fueled with a kind of cold rage of feeling that the institution of motherhood in so many ways was taking advantage of women around me across race and class lines and socioeconomic lines and in so many different areas, in terms of maternity care, in terms of going back to work, all sorts of, there's so many structures in the institution which need improvement. So it was almost not an option for this not to be a subject.
And in terms of care, I think we're not really talking about how transformative care can be if a person is supported, if they have the space to do that, that's actually a really powerful and transformative experience for men and for women. And that's not to say people should do that and necessarily will always be like that, but it can be like that. And God knows we need more of that energy and that learning than we need people going out and making more spreadsheet models stuff. That kind of learning that's really deep and personal and intimate and nuanced, that's really valuable. And instead, we just try and turn it into, well, how can we make this the most cost effective and, yeah, provide the higher level of care, but just institutionalize it and whatnot. It's threatening to talk about it as something that is really personal and intimate, because does that mean that you should then quit your job and go do that? Not necessarily, but how can you fold that awareness into it, that it can be this really powerful thing, not only for the child, but for the caregiver themselves and for our understanding of what matters in community and in society, and all of that. And for living in community, which I think all of us want a lot more of, and we're not getting when we're isolating all of these things in their own institution, where you go to work and your kid is over here and everything is in its little silo. We're missing that too.
Purpose can be seen very different ways and pursuing very different ways. As much as I love dance, it's one of the biggest things that I will always have in my life. Bringing a human being to earth, it's so magical. You are designing life, you are educating life, you are teaching them the do's and don'ts of life. But I think also having the experience of almost losing what you love, but finding a different purpose in it, it can shift everything.
I was exhausted. I had two kids, a two-year-old and a baby. They were with me pretty much all the time. I was very tired, but I still felt this spark of creativity, excitement, and energy that I can't really explain, other than to say that it was directly related to them and to being a mother. And then infused itself with my intellectual interests.
I feel like I've always had confidence, but it was definitely different after having Laura. And I think that boosted more my artistry without being scared, without being judged, without, I don't know, you know, when you were really free, I think I felt like that. And then that brought a different strength in my artistry and in my dancing.
Midlife crises are funny. I don't feel I had a midlife crisis. I feel I had a midlife rebirth, where I just decided the most fun, amazing, exciting thing that I can do right now is go to medical school. It's in my heart. I feel like I get to be a new person. I get to live two lives. I have lived as an artist, and now I will have lived as a doctor. So I have given birth to an entirely new person. And I just think it's fun. I get to experience life twice. And I think that's what a midlife reimagining and revisioning should be all about.
I think I've given birth to expansion kind of expanding myself and what I'm capable of and what I can offer to my children, to the world as an artist, to myself. I think it's been a slow process of birthing that expansiveness within myself, that like spaciousness of spirit, and very much in process.
So I think about giving birth and natality as something that we can all do every day, like a power of natality that we have, which is never ending, and that it's possible every day to give birth to something new. And what have I given birth to? I don't know. I mean, yes, the books and the babies, but I spend a lot of time outside, and I feel that natality and giving birth is the condition of being alive. Every time we breathe, we are giving birth to some kind of microorganisms. And I suppose that philosophically or intellectually, that's exciting to me, because I don't believe that the structures and systems that we live in today are natural, or we take them as a given that it has to be like this. And I don't believe that's true. And I think when I look out and I look at the natality of the world, it's empowering, and it shows how things can change and new things can be birthed. I just have a strong belief in that. New movements, new ways of being, new ways of thinking, and new language is so much part of that.
I often think about that at the end of the day, if all that is left is this digital record of what it felt like in 2023 and 2024 and 2025 to be wrestling with these questions and to share these experiences, that alone is valuable, and that it is truly a record of human experience. Like, we are living history, right? And so having these conversations and recording them and putting them in a place where they can be held in this archive, I think really matters too. And I think gives the individual voice and experience that much more power that hopefully can be potentially a really positive tool moving forward now, but also generations to come, to understand what it was like in this particular political, social moment.
And with that, we leave you at the end of season 3 of the Postpartum Production Podcast. Thank you for listening, for following, and for sitting in community. If this season and the conversations have taught me anything, it's that we are not alone, and we are, despite the cliche in saying so, definitely so much stronger when we are in this together. I also have to share some exciting updates of this podcast, including some of the voices herein, thankfully not my scratchy one, was featured this past spring in Virginia Tech's Mothering exhibit, which will continue on to James Madison University this fall as an ongoing exhibition. Thank you and hooray for motherhood and art in academia. And finally, because we all need a laugh these days, and because my voice is just so Kathleen Turner today, I'll leave you with my favorite husky voice songstress, reminding us that even smelly cats can't help being smelly.
Before I start, I just want to say that I have a cold. So if I sneeze in the middle of a song, it's not on purpose. Oh, except the last verse of Pepper People. Smelly cat, smelly cat. What are they feeding you? This chick sounds good. Smelly cat, smelly. Hey, Gunther, be a good little boy. Bring me a whiskey.
I'm your host, Caitlin Salamini, and this is the Postpartum Production Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating. This will help us reach more listeners like you who are navigating the joys and pitfalls of artistic and parenting identities. For regular updates, visit our website, postpartumproduction.com, follow us on Instagram at Postpartum Production Podcast, and subscribe to our podcast newsletter on Substack. Thank you for listening, and we are so grateful to have you with us on this journey. Postpartum may feel like forever, and sometimes it may feel very lonely, but you're not alone here.